Hi, it's Patrick Hutzel from IntensiveCareHotline.com, where we instantly improve the lives of families of critically ill patients in intensive care so that you can have peace of mind, real power, real control, and so that you can influence decision making fast, even if you're not a doctor or a nurse in intensive care. This is another episode of Your Questions Answered. And in last week's episode, I answered another question from one of our readers. And the question last week was part 4 of My mother is in intensive care after her heart stopped. We believe that the intensive care team is keeping her sedated and paralyzed for longer than necessary. What should we do? You can check out the answer to last week's question by clicking on the link below this video. Trudy, who has asked this question, has also been featured on our podcast, where she shares her story and her challenges with a difficult intensive care team while her mother was in intensive care. You can check out the podcast with Trudy by clicking on the link below this video. In this week's episode of Your Questions Answered, I want to answer another question from one of our readers, and in this week, Peter from the United States asks, my friend is in intensive care ventilated with leukemia. The doctors have made her DNR or do not resuscitate. I disagree. What are the best options? Hi Patrick, thanks for your advocacy and your information. My dear friend has fought acute lymphoblastic leukemia for 4 years now and was just lately in a clinical trial at a hospital in Los Angeles. About 10 days or so ago, she developed infections. Her white cell count has been extremely low for a long time now, and after several days of antibiotics and not getting better, she was transferred to intensive care. After a couple of days there, I was called and told she was at risk of dying if she was not intubated, put on a ventilator and given a bronchoscopy to see what was going on in her lungs. I, of course, consented to this. Now it's 4 days on the ventilator and she's in chronic afibrillation. She's had it for years, but not chronically. She's in an induced coma and the C. diff infection is not getting better, while other infections may be improving. The doctors met with my friend's brother. I live a few hours away and will meet with the doctors tomorrow. And they decided to make her DNR, which is do not resuscitate, if her heart should stop. I'm ambivalent about whether this is what she would want, given that she has fought through so much with me at her side all these years. I do know from her that she does want to be kept alive indefinitely on a ventilator if there's little or no chance of a decent life. One of my thoughts is if we could reduce the pain and other sedating medications somewhat, might she become alert enough to tell us what she wants? The past couple of days she has opened her eyes more, but is not responsive to communication as far as we can tell. Here is also her brother Greg's synopsis of the meeting with the doctors yesterday. I deeply appreciate your thoughts and clarity here because, as you know, Patrick, time is of the essence. With deepest thanks, Peter. So here is what the patient's brother writes to Peter. Here's what the doctor said in a nutshell. Chris's condition is unchanged except for her atrial fibrillation, which is controlled, and her abdomen, which feels firmer. She still has a rapid and irregular heartbeat, but people can live for years with atrial fibrillation. Her firmer abdomen means she still has C. diff and her colon is inflamed and filling with air, which could lead to a lethal condition called megacolon. The blood culture from October the 5th has now grown after 3 days, which may be a sign the antibiotics are working or at least holding the bacteria at bay. But the C. diff is still there. What Chris needs is for her white cell count to fight the infection, and she has virtually none. Her bone marrow isn't producing it. The doctors don't think she will survive if taken off the ventilator. We will discuss Chris's condition again on Friday. Neither doctor liked the idea of taking Chris off the meds to ask her what she wanted. They said she would be in pain and her only choice would be to stay on the ventilator indefinitely, something she has already said she didn't want. I urge you to talk to Dr. Migashi in the ICU, either in person or by phone, to get your questions answered. Hi Peter, thank you for your question and thank you for your kind words regarding our website. I'm very sorry to hear what you and your friend are currently going through. Leukemia in intensive care is a big challenge for some of the reasons that you have outlined already, and many patients with leukemia don't survive their stay in intensive care. However, being asked to issue or sign a DNR, do not resuscitate, or NFR, not for resuscitation order, is an entirely different matter altogether. Especially in light of the fact that you and your friend's brother feel like she wouldn't want the DNR or do not resuscitate order, or at least it's unclear to me whether the doctors quote-unquote made her DNR or your friend's brother consented to it. In any case, it worries me that there seems to be a lack of transparency around the DNR from your perspective. DNR, do not resuscitate, or NFR, not for resuscitation orders, have their time and their place after open disclosure, after transparency, and only after mutual agreement between all parties has been achieved. It sounds to me like that hasn't been the case and the DNR has been implied. You should certainly question that approach and you mustn't be intimidated by the perceived power and the perceived authority of the intensive care team. If you think that the DNR has just been issued by the intensive care team without consent from you and or from your friend's brother, you certainly should object. Intensive care teams can be extremely adept and shrewd to quote-unquote sell a withdrawal of treatment or a limitation of treatment as being quote-unquote in the best interest of a critically ill patient. Often this approach reflects what's happening behind the scenes in intensive care, and it's often a result of the financial interests, the bed management pressures, the medical research interests, and also often the general nature of the intensive care team that quote-unquote we know what's best without an open and transparent discussion taking place. End-of-life situations, or even perceived end-of-life situations, are very special in nature and all parties involved shouldn't rush things. A careful evaluation of the situation is necessary. I can't predict the outcome of your friend's stay in intensive care. However, you should definitely do the right thing by your friend and give her the chance to come out of the induced coma and let her assess her situation if she can. The issue and the challenge could well be that your friend may not wake up from the induced coma and will never be able to make her own decisions. But I think you've got to try anyway. You also should ask about the clinical trial. Why was your friend on a trial? Could that trial be related to the intensive care team suggesting the DNR? Never underestimate the medical research interests in an intensive care unit. I have also published a related article where I talk about how medical research dominates your critically ill loved one's diagnosis and prognosis, as well as the care and treatment your loved one is receiving or not receiving. You can check out that article if you're clicking on the link below this video in the written version of this blog. It sounds to me, Peter, like you are realistic, and patients in intensive care with leukemia often approach their end of life. However, why do a bronchoscopy, start antibiotics, screen your friend in all corners, and then suggest a DNR? And once again, this is not about the intensive care team. This is about what you and your friend want, and how you and your friend can have peace of mind, control, power, and influence. Low white cell count is a big issue, and it's often not a good starting point and makes your friend extremely vulnerable. Single organ failure, in your friend's case the lungs, can often be enough to tip them over the edge. The atrial fibrillation is not too much of a concern, but again, can be enough to add on to the dilemma your friend is already in. You should also check out some articles here regarding DNR, NFR, and or withdrawal of treatment, as well as about induced coma. The articles you can read are: My 80-year-old father is in intensive care with myeloma. The intensive care team has asked me to sign a DNR and I refused. What are my options? The next related article that you can check out is The 5 questions you need to ask when the intensive care team is talking about futility of treatment, withdrawal of life support, or about withdrawal of treatment. Another article you should check out is How long does it take to wake up after an induced coma? Another article or video you can watch or read is What is an induced coma and why is my critically ill loved one in an induced coma? Check out those articles by clicking on the links below this video. I hope that helps, Peter. Please let me know if you have any other questions. I can also be available for a 30-minute free Skype consultation. How can you have peace of mind, control, power, and influence whilst your loved one is critically ill in intensive care? You get to that all-important feeling of peace of mind, control, power, and influence when you download your free Instant Impact Report now by entering your email below. In your free Instant Impact Report, you learn quickly how to get peace of mind, real power, and real control, and how you can influence decision-making fast whilst your loved one is critically ill in intensive care. Your free Instant Impact Report gives you in-depth insight that you must know whilst your loved one is critically ill or is even dying in intensive care. Sign up and download your free Instant Impact Report now by entering your email below. In your free Instant Impact Report, you learn how to speak the secret intensive care language so that the doctors and the nurses know straight away that you are an insider and that you know and understand what's really happening in intensive care. In your free report, you will also discover how to ask the doctors and the nurses the right questions, discover the many competing interests in intensive care, and how your critically ill loved one's treatment may depend on those competing interests. How to eliminate fear, frustration, stress, struggle, and vulnerability even if your loved one is dying. You get 5 killer tips and strategies helping you to get on the right path to peace of mind, control, power, and influence in your situation. You'll get real-world examples that you can easily adapt to your and your critically ill loved one's situation. How to stop being intimidated by the intensive care team and how you will be seen as equals. You'll get crucial behind-the-scenes insight so that you know and understand what's really happening in intensive care and how you need to manage doctors and nurses in intensive care. And it's not what you think. Thank you for tuning into this week's Your Questions Answered episode, and I'll see you again in another update next week. Make sure you also check out our blog section for more tips and strategies, or send me an email to support@intensivecarehotline.com with your questions. This is Patrick Hutzel from intensivecarehotline.com, and I'll see you again next week in another update.